A lot of people worry about potential food scarcity in a disaster, but not how bland and flavorless most survival food can be. That's why I maintain a large supply of disaster peppers. As a mechanical engineer, I think a lot about how systems work and how to keep them working. You might see a cute little mini truck or an apartment building, but I see hundreds of mechanical and structural components, each with a specified function, maintenance schedule, lifespan, load capacity, and array of failure modes. Infrastructure also falls under that lens. The electricity that's powering this camera is being pumped into my wall sockets by miles of physically contiguous copper and aluminum wire through a series of high-voltage power relay stations, and somewhere on the other side of that chain is a massive wind turbine spinning some magnets in a tube 100 meters off the ground. You might guess that perspective would make me paranoid. And I do tend to spot-check bolts whenever I climb onto a carnival ride. But honestly, it's reassuring to know that even with all that complexity, so much care and attention goes into keeping important systems operational that failures are exceedingly rare. The mechanisms we rely on every day to keep the lights on and calories arriving on grocery store shelves have always been vulnerable to failure, and always are failing, but they continue to operate reliably despite being compromised in new and exciting ways every day. Trees knock down power lines, delivery trucks get flat tires, boats get stuck, and all those problems are absorbed by redundancy, careful planning, redundancy, and maintenance workers improvising solutions, such that I never need to make dinner plans worrying that a random Don Quixote might knock out my power. Weirdly enough, that is what worries me. In his undisputed Bible of organizational risk management, psychologist James Reason takes a pragmatic look at the patterns of behavior and decision-making that lead to disaster. It's pretty confusing to talk about him using his last name, so I'm going to call him James. You're probably familiar with the defenses in depth model of layered security, also known as the Swiss cheese model, which he popularized. We regularly build defenses between dangerous sources of entropy, hazards, and squishy things that we'd rather not expose to that entropy, like people. But every layer of security has gaps and flaws, like the holes in a slice of Swiss cheese, and when enough of those flaws align, people are exposed to the hazard and can get hurt. James emphasizes that we're always fighting an uphill battle against an instinctive complacency. The better our defenses are, the longer people go without confronting the risks inherent to hazards, and the easier it is to forget why the defenses are there, or why we should treat them with capital R respect. He notes that pressures of productivity often compel people to lean on their security measures, to take shortcuts and push their luck, confident that even if one layer of defenses fails, something else will catch them before they come to harm. Paradoxically, this increases the risk that when those defenses do fail, the results will be even more devastating. He quotes organizational theorist Charles Perrow, "Fixes, including safety devices, often merely allow those in charge to run the system faster, or in worse weather, or with bigger explosives." James suggests there are basically two approaches for organizations to choose from regarding safety. If they focus on outcomes, throwing up defenses whenever something scary happens, they'll always be walking a tightrope, teetering back and forth between near misses and knee-jerk safety measures, until some catastrophe injures or kills a bunch of people, or some expensive, ill-conceived safeguard kills productivity. The other option is to take a proactive approach of risk management, something like the method I described in episode 251, regularly interrogating what sorts of hazards exist, what sorts of defenses can lower the risk of them hurting someone, and how effective those defenses really are in practice, as people are constantly coming up with novel ways to work around them and get things done. Unfortunately, risk managers aren't literally omniscient, so near misses will still happen, but they can be harnessed in a purposeful way, used as prompts to assess where there might be holes in defenses, how they're compromised, and to brainstorm ways to patch them up or replace them with something more effective. A reactive approach is only ever trying to prevent the last fire, while a proactive one uses each fire as an opportunity to interrogate the long chain of causality that led to a situation where a fire was possible, and to change things so fires of any kind are less likely. That model of the psychology that leads organizations into or away from disaster applies remarkably well outside of organizational safety. Consider hurricanes, which can pour trillions of watts and billions of cubic feet of water into a region the size of Wisconsin. That sustained assault stresses every sewer, every power station, every communications hub, every structure. We don't usually think of these as defenses in depth, but they are a series of backstops interposed between us and hazards that threaten our well-being, and a chink in one system's capacity to insulate us from flooding, exposure, or flying debris can, hopefully, fall back on a different system, like fire departments, transit, or disaster relief shelters, before we suffer irreversible harm. Governments and communities can get lax about the proactive analysis necessary to anticipate and diffuse risk, devolving into a complacent confidence that measures put in place years ago will keep working as they always have, or even taking the absence of problems as evidence that there are corners to be cut. As James puts it, there's one very common reason why defensive weaknesses are not detected and repaired. The people involved had forgotten to be afraid. Shaving these systems down to only what's absolutely necessary for normal operation speaks to a lack of concern with what's really at stake when we're talking about things like power failure or flooding. There are harsh realities concealed in those words that we'd rather not talk about because they mean facing our own vulnerability and mortality. But disasters do happen. With accelerating global climate change, we can all expect them more frequently, pushing on our defenses against the hazards posed by wildfires, storms, heat waves, drought, supply chain interruptions, and 100 other things harder every year. Pressuring institutions to be proactive about risk management is useful and important work. It behooves everyone to remind their city council what's really at stake when safety measures are sacrificed for efficiency. But, as James stresses in his book, putting all your eggs in one basket is really loading up one point of failure. Even the best-funded fire department, armed with the best technology and training, can only handle so many fires at one time. And if yours is the N+1 fire, even if it's a tiny one they could deal with in seconds under normal circumstances, you're just going to have to sit and watch it burn things down. Unless you have your own defenses prepared. Preppers get a bad rap as being paranoid, asocial weirdos. And it's sadly true that many are focused entirely on their survival in an emergency, unconcerned whether anyone else in their community makes it out alive, or even excited at the opportunity to play PUBG in real life. The average eye-rolling response to someone who brags about a stash of canned food and ammunition is well-deserved, but I think many scoff at the wrong part of that equation. It's not crazy to look back on the past decade of pandemics and institutional chaos, at the future of climate change and geopolitical conflict, and invest some supplies and time in another layer of redundancy against hazards. A more valid critique might be a misalignment between the defenses a prepper decides to invest in, their efficacy, and the risks they're actually in danger of being exposed to. At the beginning of COVID lockdowns, a ton of people became convinced that the supply chains which produced and distributed toilet paper were in jeopardy, and caused a brief shortage of toilet paper by rushing out and buying it in absurd quantities, all prompted by a largely unfounded social media panic. In a pandemic that killed millions of people, crippled hospitals, devastated public education, and exacerbated food insecurity, many people spent their last moments before the storm hit making absolutely sure they wouldn't need to improvise a way to clean their butts. I think there's a reasonable middle ground somewhere between a blasé expectation that whatever defenses have kept you safe will keep working indefinitely, and arbitrary hoarding informed more by zombie movies and Twitter hashtags than any sort of data. Having some well-thought-out resources and groundwork laid for emergencies is a responsible, community-minded way to add one more slice of Swiss cheese to the stack, to keep yourself and others from being exposed to hazards in situations when other defenses have failed, or to reduce the demand on systems that might struggle to keep up in especially bad conditions until their diligent maintainers can get them fully operational again. When Hurricane Helene wrecked the southeastern U.S. in 2024, businesses, libraries, and individuals took it upon themselves to set up what became known as resilience hubs, places where survivors could gather and share food, water, electricity, communication equipment, whatever might help them last until disaster relief efforts could restore a baseline of infrastructure. Resilience hubs were so useful for those communities limping along in the wake of the storm that some cities are currently funding programs to help anyone who's interested register and set up their own. As James would put it, once the hurricane reminded those communities to be afraid, They set up spontaneous defenses in the moment, and rather than simply expecting those defenses to manifest again in the next crisis, they're taking active steps to cultivate better defenses for future events. That's not paranoia, that's just proactive risk management. Now, I'm not any sort of survival expert, but if you'll humor me, I'd like to tell you some of the things that I do to insulate me and my community from any temporary gaps in our defenses against hazards. Don't worry, I'm not going to list all my emergency supplies, though yes, I do have a list, but I'd like to get you thinking about how you might set aside some mental energy, budget, and closet space for an especially bad day. The first thing I want to mention is instantly going to put me at odds with the unhinged prepper stereotype: relationships. It's true that people can be unpredictable in high-stress situations, but having another pair of hands to clear debris off roads, or keep an ear out for information on the radio, or to come check on me if they haven't heard from me for a while, is an incredible resource in an emergency. Organized mutual aid networks, like the Hurricane Helene Resilience Hubs, exist just about everywhere, and they're always thrilled to have new members interested in pooling resources and knowledge. Getting to know your neighbors can be awkward or difficult, but developing and maintaining those relationships is almost always worth the effort, especially when you need someone's help to lift a tree off your car. At a bare minimum, I always have 3 phone numbers, both in my phone and written down somewhere safe, for people who live within walking distance and have eaten something I've baked for them, and I check in on them at least once a month. Keeping those people and myself healthy enough to help also seems like a thing any responsible person should be ready for. Many cities, hospitals, and fire departments offer free first aid and stop the bleed classes, because a person with basic medical training makes everyone in their community safer. Take one. I'm serious. If you haven't, you should pull out your phone right now and search for first aid class followed by your city name. If somebody does get hurt, simple first aid kits are pretty cheap, and some classes will give you one for free. I also think of maintaining my physical health as a preparedness measure. It's easier to withstand smaller injuries if you're generally fit, which can increase the chances that you'll be in a position to help others rather than needing to be rescued. Firefighters work hard to maintain the muscle necessary to haul someone out of a fire. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm working on it. There are a few necessities down at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs that can be cushioned without needing to excavate a bunker under your home. Water is essential, and disruptions to water mains are common in disasters. Contamination or damage can leave a whole city without access to anything that's safe to drink. I keep an 8-gallon container of drinkable water at the bottom of a closet, and I have a calendar reminder to change it out every 6 months so it doesn't get funky, to keep me and my neighbors hydrated until help arrives. White rice, dried beans, and lentils in airtight containers can last for years. I keep a couple of these big boys in my pantry and refill them as I cook my way through, which adds up to about 2 weeks' worth of cheap, nutritious calories. No MREs necessary. I also have a teensy camp stove and a couple fuel tanks in case my beloved induction burner is out of commission. On a related note, everyone should know how to use a fire extinguisher, and if you don't have one within 10 meters of your kitchen, you should get one, or at least one of these nifty, reusable fire-smothering blankets. Communication in an emergency is essential and often challenging. Cell towers only last for a few days without power, if that, and other mediums are likely to be overwhelmed by everyone in the affected area trying to talk and call for help at the same time. In situations where phone service might be spotty, whistles and flashlights are small, cheap, and remarkably useful for finding and coordinating with other people at a distance. I keep a set on my keys. I also keep a battery bank for my phone, and if you're a nerd, you should really check out Ham Radio and MeshCore, a wireless communication protocol that lets you send and receive short text messages without internet, cell service, or electricity, all with around $30 of components. Speaking of electricity, I know where my apartment building's electric, gas, and water shutoffs are, and I have the tools necessary to shut them down if there's a problem. I don't want to have to figure all that out while a burst water pipe is hosing down my books. That's really the crux of all this risk management and preparedness stuff. If the Thunk Fan Discord is representative, you're probably a smart and resourceful person. You can probably coordinate with strangers in an emergency. You can probably muddle through giving first aid when someone gets injured without any training. You could probably handle filtering and purifying water if your sink started pumping out muck. You're more than capable of improvising solutions to these sorts of challenges if you had to, but anticipating and laying down some defenses before someone's life is hanging in the balance, before time is running out and resources are stretched thin, can give you and emergency personnel a little bit of breathing room to manage all the other problems you'll likely be facing at the same time. As James Reason's analysis highlighted, dealing with hazards reactively is both costly and dangerous. Small, thoughtful, incremental preparations are much cheaper and more reliable than heroic exertions while you're in the thick of it. An ounce of prevention is worth several hundred pounds of toilet paper. What hazards are most likely in your part of the world? Earthquakes? Tsunamis? Bigfoot? What steps have you taken to keep your community safe from those hazards? How does James Reason's framework of defenses in depth apply to other areas of risk you deal with every day? Please leave a comment below and let me know what you think. Thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to blah blah subscribe blah share, and don't stop thunking. Also, take a first aid class. Seriously.